going.
All right.
You're chairing this.
No, I don't think so.
Well, you seem to be pursuing the agenda, so.
Sir, this is a copy of the letter that you wrote to Colonel Weaver.
Yes, sir.
And one of the things that you talked about in this letter was that the radar test flights were not reported, which
That's
is
correct.
Exactly what we were just discussing a moment ago in your kitchen. Would you go over again what you just described as far as this particular test flight that occurred, what we just went through in there?
Well, as I said initially, the essence in trying to develop constant level balloons, we needed to know what the altitude was. And at the same time, we were under a lot of pressure to carry the test microphones for the Watson Laboratory in Columbia people. We got into an operation at Alamogordo in early June of 1947, in which we were required to make flights, in which the tracking of the flights would be provided by the Watson Laboratory radar that was already in place at Alamogordo for tracking the V-2s and other rockets the Ordnance Corps people were flying over it at White Sands. And so we came down to fly balloons in early June, in which the tracking of the flights was to be done by radar tracking corner reflector targets, which I think we brought with us. I don't have any evidence of this.
So you made your plan in New York to fly. Your primary research was the acoustical detection.
That's correct.
Secondary was the refining the technique of constant level balloon.
And that was on hold until we got the delivery of the polyethylene balloons that was scheduled for the end of June. And so on the 1st of June, we came really just for the test flights of microphones doing service flights for Watson Laboratories.
To fly the balloons in association with V2 launches.
Fly meteorological balloons tracked by Watson Lab radar on the ML-307B targets that I think we brought with us.
And you launched these balloons in conjunction with V2 firings?
Well, no, those went independently. Albert Crary was monitoring the V2 firings, and
that was with the ground microphones.
Wait a minute, you're right. I beg your pardon. Yes, you'll find in the diary that we launched Flight 8, these cluster balloons. We launched those at 3 o'clock in the morning for a V2 firing. You're quite right. I'd forgotten that. We launched those in the morning, then the rocket got scrubbed while Flight 8 was in the air, and we were out of plastic balloons that day in early July. This is jumping ahead to early July. And we put up a flight of inflated meteorological balloons for the delayed firing of the V-2 rocket on the afternoon of July 3rd, you'll right. see. And then there was an accident over at White Sands, and the V-2 got scrubbed the second time. And what was Flight 9, we launched Flight 9, as you will see in here, as a dummy flight. And it probably had radar targets on it. Let me just read this. This is Crary's summary for week of June 30 June, 5 July, 1947. Balloon test 7, 8, 9, and 10 off this week. Test 7 scheduled slated for July 1, postponed to July 2nd because equipment not ready. 100 tanks of helium obtained from Amarillo Monday evening. Trukowski went over in a C-54 and picked them up. Also, a radio sound receiver set up by NYU, but sonobuoy not operable. Test 7 at dawn July 2nd with Piebald, 1 hour, first falling with theodolites. Winds were very light and balloons up between base and mountains most of the time. Included a cluster of MET balloons, followed by C-54 several hours, and finally landed in mountains near Rhodes, south Cloudcroft. Before gear could be recovered, most of it had been stolen. Stationed operating in North Hangar, Cloudcroft and Roswell. Shots made repeatedly at Site 4 and picked up good from North Hangar and from Cloudcroft for a while. Nothing from Roswell. On Thursday morning, July 3rd, a cluster of GM plastic balloons sent up for V-2 recording, but V-2 not fired. No shots fired. Balloons up for some time.
What is a shot?
Explosives on the ground.
You were doing explosives on the ground in New Mexico, too.
Query
would give you the signal that he's going to, they'd say at 0400, I'm going to launch a balloon, and 0500, I'm going to...
No, he wouldn't launch a balloon. I'd launch a balloon. What people would do is say, I want a flight up tomorrow morning. So the NYU group would get ready to make a flight, and then Crary would go out with his crew and fire explosives up and down the Tularosa Basin while our balloons were in the air.
Oh.
Sorry.
So you had multiple, the explosions on the ground, the V-2.
And explosions on the East Coast.
East Coast, Bermuda, Caribbean. And you had those times so you know when they were going to take place, and you were simply waiting for the...
They had them time, and we balloon types fit into the schedule. But the master, the timing, bringing all this together, we knew nothing about. We were just scheduled for 5 balloons.
But you did want to launch early morning for the light winds.
We did want to launch early in the morning, light winds. You know, we had freedom to tell them what we could do and what we couldn't do. We actually, on this, in addition to everything else, Colonel, we actually flew blocks of TNT on free balloons and fired them, fired them while we had other balloons in the air.
Now, did those have radar targets on them also?
Probably.
Did they, were those detonated by...
Pressure switch.
Pressure switch?
That's correct.
Were those tracked? And was there some sort of log that would tell you where those particular balloons were? You wouldn't want to just release TNT to float anywhere, would you?
Well, they wouldn't float. The balloons would just go up until they burst. So, and we were on the edge of the restricted area. So the answer is, yeah, we did. I'll have to get back to this. The radar tracking, Colonel, turned out to be abysmally poor. I don't know why, but they were abysmally poor, and that's why I got off onto this part of it. And when you asked me the V-2 question, anyway, let me finish this, and we'll get back to what you asked. Thursday morning, cluster of GM balloons sent out, V-2 not fired, no shots fired, balloons up for some time, no recording. Pieballs showed no west winds. Balloons picked up by radar. WS, now I presume that means white sand. You'll find it's hard to say. And hunted by somebody's name I couldn't get. It said it looks like Mariel's. C-54, located on Tularosa Range by air, out PM with several NYU men by weapons carrier, but we never located it. Rocket postponed until 7:30 PM Thursday night, which was the 3rd. But on the last minute before balloon went up, V-2 was called off on account action of white sands. Sent up cluster balloons with dummy load. Balloon flight number 10 on dawn, July 5th, had gone out with C-54 again with Moses and Dufill to hunt for flight 8, but not sure was found then. And then I added a note here, flight 8 was never recovered. C-54 went to El Paso July 4th and picked up single Smith plastic balloon and GM cluster plastic balloons. And so the answer is yes, we did try to coordinate the balloon launchings for the V-2 firings. And Crary would also take that as a time of opportunity to go out on the desert and fire TNT. He had vast stocks of explosives available to him.
Was that primarily though on the White Sands Range, or did he go out into other areas, say northwest of Roswell? And in other words, did he contract with any of the ranchers to use these locales other than the actual missile range itself?
I think, Colonel, he sent all the explosions he made were coordinated with the White Sands Proving Ground people. Alamogordo Airfield, later Holloman, was just on the fringe of the Proving Ground at that time. Cray sent his men to all sorts of places, over to Roswell, to Artesia, to Hagerman, up and down the Pecos River area. He had a place you'll read about in Fabian's, Texas, which turns out to be just down the Rio Grande from El Paso, maybe 50 miles. And then Don Edmondson went to Silver City frequently, and then he had some place he called Donia. There's a county, Las Cruces is in Donia Ana County, but I don't know where his Donia site was. I think he had microphones scattered all around in central New Mexico and northwest Texas, the explosions were all created either on White Sands Proving Ground, or there were V-2 rockets, or there were things that were coming from the, I won't take your time now, but you'll find that he talked about cruises, which apparently are, maybe there was a cruiser or something firing off the Jersey coast. But to get back, we got off into this, we were talking about tracking, and we went down to, in early June, to make service flights, which were to be tracked by radar, and the radar was unsuccessful. And it's my memory that we made a number of flights just to test out the radar. And these would not have had a reward tag on them. These were throwaway flights. Once a target like this comes down from high altitude or drag, you don't want it back. And my memory, we didn't want to have anything traced back to us if we weren't going to go out and pick it up.
So you just kind of let the material just lie wherever it fell?
And we shot a balloon into the air and didn't want to do any more. There's some pictures. Let's see, these are pictures. Here are pictures of our going out to recover things. On one of the early flights, we went out 100 miles east, roughly, not 100 miles, we went out east of Roswell, and I remember beyond the bottomless lakes, going out in an oil well country, picking up one of our flights that had come down. We aggressively tried to recover our own flight.
So were you directed to that location by aircraft?
By the aircraft.
Did they give you a lat long?
Or they
landmark?
We'd talk to them by radio. The transmitters on these microphones were so low powered that, believe it or not, they had B-17s just orbiting under our balloons with receivers aboard the aircraft, and we of course would talk to the aircraft, and they'd tell us when things would come down. So it was a coordinated operation.
So they were they recording the, okay, so you had explosions or V-2 going through, so the aircraft had recording devices to. You had the acoustical pickup on the balloon, and the aircraft had the recording device that would record the sounds.
That's correct. We record the signal from the balloon.
Right. And what media was it recorded on?
Brush recorders. Are you familiar with brush recorders?
Yeah.
Strip chart recorders feeding out at high speed. You'll see them in here. You'll see the sort of records.
Just a graphic representation.
And that was recorded on the aircraft.
The recorders looked like that.
So then that was recorded on the aircraft, and then...
That's correct.
Okay.
There were, as you'll see when I read, they said they had receivers at Roswell, at Alamogordo, and they had them on the airplane.
Okay.
But most of the detection was via the aircraft because of the low-power receivers.
Well, most of the reception, the detection was really up at the balloon received the acoustic signal and sent it down by radio. To the aircraft, and the aircraft often didn't work. That was the reason why for Operation Sandstone in April and May of 48, we went up and down the Rio Grande Valley. Here's some of the pictures from that. There's a ground cloth for the balloon to be laid out,
right.
And there's a balloon being inflated, just getting ready. And so we tried to get upwind. That's a device from White Sands that was picked up around Carrizozo and was reported into us, and we thought it was one of ours. And so I took a weapons carrier and drove up up there. We were aggressively trying to recover our equipment. That just happened to be something that was on the ground. And the fellow, the technician that was that I said that had been in my group, remembered the mark on the tape, Herbert Crow. That's a picture he took when we were aggressively trying to recover a. Well, that turned out not to be ours.
Well, what is it, and who did it belong to?
Probably belonged to. Probably was flown by on a rocket or by Marcus O'Day, who was the chief scientist at Watson Laboratory.
Right.
Dr. O'Day, and you'll see when you read the Duffy things, where Duffy thinks, well, maybe there were things that were flown by Dr. O'Day. But anyway, that just happens to be a picture in the collection of NYU photographs.
It's a description.
So there are a lot of other people either flying balloons or launching.
Not balloons. We were the only balloon flyers.
Just okay, came down by parachute.
I came down by parachute. But there were a lot of rockets being flown in the early days there, and there was a lot of high-altitude aircraft. Duffy said that there were drop suns. You're familiar with
yes.
drop suns?
Yes. So it could be that some of the material found may not have been associated with the balloon. I mean, it is possible that it could have been something, some other type of material. But the description that Brazell gives the impression that it is the rubbery, the smoky rubber of a balloon that's been in the sunlight.
It's circumstantial. That fits exactly what would have been done. And orthodox use of radar targets would not have produced what he found. This is quite right. There's debris that was reported to us that turned out not to be ours.
This brings another question.
That's like some sort of cylindrical instrument, though. That's obviously an instrument package of some sort.
Had a plexiglass. It looked like it maybe had a UV sensor. There was some optical equipment under the plexiglass dome that was shattered in the front.
You're familiar with the popular literature about the various crash sites. There's one crash site, two crash sites, three crash sites, and all that craziness.
Yes.
Okay. This could be what I'm thinking is maybe they collected your. We may have two incidents here where they collected your debris from your radar targets, and then there may have been another
something else
in
not
the
related
area.
To balloons.
There could have been other things from White Sands. The only thing, this was on the edge of the proving ground. There's a story behind this, and that is a rancher whose land had been taken from him to form the proving ground had cattle that were still on the on what had been his land. And he had found this while he was looking for his cattle up near, I can show you on the map if you're interested exactly where it was found. Anyway, he called in to Alamogordo about this, and so I went up and to see if it was one of our missing balloons. And while we were there, a range security guard came on the rancher and really castigated him for breaking the law, coming back onto the range. So this was really on the range. It would be hard for me to understand how the sort of operations of which I knew could have fallen as far away as these other sites you talk about. This was really on the edge of the range, on the northeast corner of the range, just west of the town of Carrizozo, if you know.
So that's not too far from here.
Well, let's see. I
got your map here.
Let's see.
Relationship
to Roswell. Here's the northeast corner range. Is this Corona? Get over.
It's Corona.
Corona. I said maybe I have to come down. I thought I was thinking there. Okay, right here. It was found, let's see, am I right? There's Carrizozo, isn't it?
Yes.
And so right on this road here, right about there is where that load there was found. And here is where the Brazel finding was, just north of this bend of the road here, and there's Roswell.
Right. So they talk in terms of sites around Corona and in that vicinity. So it's quite possible that there had been other types of debris, you know, from the proving ground or.
Well, it's, as I say, I find it hard to think that something. While we may have been flying TNT on balloons and being very carefree about it, I really doubt that any thing of any military significance would have fallen this far away from the proving ground. It could have, but
other than your balloons.
Other than our balloons. Oh yeah, our balloons were those first flights. We didn't even coordinate with CAA.
Right.
People were so eager to go get the measurements that these were going to be flown from a restricted area, and he didn't worry about it. We later went before the Civil Air Board in El Paso, but that was 2 or 3 months later.
So, when you left, when you went on the field trips, what was your chain of command at that point when you arrived? Who did you report to?
We were somewhat self-contained, but we got housing provided by, I guess Crary was our contact, if you will, and somewhere or another, barracks were made available for us to live in at Alamogordo.
Would anyone at Roswell Army Airfield have known about your activities, what your purpose was?
Not at all. In fact, we went over and tried to get into the weather station at Roswell because of the atomic bomb security of the 509th. We had trouble, as I remember, we couldn't even get on the base. We drove up in the weapons carrier to the Roswell Army Airfield and tried to get on the base, and because we wanted to go to the weather station, wanted to see if we could put a radio sound receiver there, and as I remember, we got turned away.
But you ultimately did put a radio sound receiver there.
In a motel. We put motels, and we just lived out, worked out of motels in Roswell.
Okay, now I thought I saw that you had a radio sound receiver in Roswell Army Airfield.
Well, you're ahead of, again, forgive my memory, but I do remember being turned away, but...
Okay.
But if you can find it, I'd be glad to have my memory refreshed.
Okay. Next question, just quick question, is I saw that you had a copy of the 509th bomb group history there.
Right.
In the 509th bomb group history from September, I saw a meeting where Dr. Peoples met with Lieutenant Colonel Joe Briley, 830th Bomb Squadron Commander, 509th Air Group Roswell. Would you know why Dr. Peoples would meet with a squadron commander of a B-29 outfit?
Only if he wanted to get in to put a receiver on the base there. That'd be my only guess. We had a big operation. We went back to Alamogordo in September. We had our first 20-foot diameter General Mills balloons. And we had a very successful set of balloon launches at Alamogordo in September of 47. And my only guess is the trying to have a downwind receiving station.
Okay. There's some other names mentioned. I can't recall.
What about then Colonel Blanchard and General Ramey? Do you think they may have had any knowledge of what your ultimate purpose was?
I think not. There is I want to tell you, say something about Colonel J.D. Ryan. Are you familiar with him?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, he was Chief of Staff of the Air Force later, but Dr. Peoples, Hackman, Murray Hackman, and First Lieutenant Thompson from Air Materiel Command ran to the field to inspect Air Materiel Command installations and to confer with Lieutenant Colonel Briley. Well. Hackman was our one of our radio sound operators. There's Colonel John D. Ryan right there. That's interesting. On the morning of this famous press release, July 8th, in the Roswell Daily Dispatch, there is a statement about a flying disc being identified, and Colonel J.D. Ryan, who's on the staff of 8th Air Force, said that the Air Force was now using radar targets to measure winds aloft in some stations. And I find that of interest because apparently in reading the various things that happened in General Ramey's office, apparently someone that afternoon did think that this was a radar target that had been brought in. And the Roswell Morning Paper clearly showed that there was a knowledgeable person in Fort Worth.
Now, is that is that in the article, the 8 July article, that it's, Ryan made the statement?
Yes, but it's maybe not the article you're talking about.
This is the 9 July.
I mean, I can give you a copy of this.
You had a copy of that 8 July?
No, this will be
after this. Is this the one that William Holt?
No, this is that morning, not that afternoon.
So, okay.
Let's see, where my newspaper clipping file?
I don't have one. No, I haven't seen one either.
Well, somewhere in here, there's a folder marked newspaper clipping.
Is that
yours?
Yes. Stuff there.
Pictures.
There's the 8th. I don't know.
Yes, sir. That's not the one I'm looking for. There's Duke Gildenberg, in case you mentioned him earlier in one of our conversations. That's one of our altitude controls. Okay, here's the morning paper, report flying disc found. And you can, now that I've identified this, right here, down here is Colonel Ryan, Colonel J.D. Ryan,
yeah.
And he mentioned the existence of radar wind measuring equipment in the Air Force.
Okay.
And this is, if you want a copy of that, if you want that, that's not the Corona one. Here's the article down there.
Okay.
And here's J.D. Ryan's biography after he became chief of staff.
Here, and then there's subsequently no mention of the radar targets until General Ramey discusses it on the 9th. Talking about the material being a balloon.
On the afternoon of the 8th.
That was General Ramey?
Yes, sir.
Let's see.
I don't know. There may have been published. May have been published on the 9th, but apparently it came out.
Okay, you're right. Evening of the 8th. That's correct. Examination by the Army revealed last night. It was the high altitude weather balloon.
Right.
General Ramey, Commander 8th Air Forces, cleared up the mystery.
You notice these pictures here don't show these flaps.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, is my stepladder that I used to reach high targets when we have these big balloon trains going way up in the air. I'm sure you've seen this.
Yes.
Here again is an unorthodox use of radar targets, and we did that, and as far as I know, other people didn't.
Did you ever use radar targets with the polyethylene balloons?
Yes, sir.
You did?
Yeah. In fact, I have a picture of where we flew a missile. We launched a missile for ONR Special Devices Center in 1949, and I have a picture showing the. targets up and down the balloon train there.
Do you remember trying to pin down some of these flights that could possibly cause this misunderstanding? Do you remember in those days, did you launch, you talk about putting the targets with the neoprene balloons, but at that time period you also launched them with the polyethylene?
Well, so, this picture I showed you right here, this is a polyethylene balloon.
You used a visual by the aircraft to watch the balloon? They would circle underneath, said, were they watching?
Well, the aircraft circling on the balloon were really to pick up the microphone signals. That was part of the Watson Lab operation. Our operation, we depended on radiosondes and where we could get radar tracking for our constant level and for tracking our balloons. But the aircraft operation here was entirely to support Project Mogul.
Okay, that
we didn't consider ourselves moguls, so I didn't even know the name. Yeah.
And the one of those things I handed you there with the summary of flights on.
You'll find it in. It's in the book. In the book. Let's see there. Right. You got it. Let's see, that's one of the flights with a missing mixed interpretation because of the radio sound.
No, I mean, it took it back from you. But it talks about the observation.
Here's the summary. Of,
yeah,
here it is.
Then in one column it says tracking percent. Okay, and then sometimes it'll say by aircraft.
Okay, that's true.
There it is.
Okay.
Oh, aircraft observation. That's what was. Was that a visual observation or electronic?
Oh, that's the air. That's really saying, did we have aircraft on it or not, and what percentage? Here, the B-17 was on it for 40% of the time. So that's just the aircraft. Indeed, that was the aircraft tracking for the Mogul operation.
Okay, that was for the electronic data gathering.
That's correct.
Not observing the balloon to tell you where it went down.
That's right. Well, we did have the aircraft stay as long as we could, and as long as we could end up with that very expensive aircraft chasing our balloon, we were happy.
Right.
And on the flight that came down east of Roswell, one of these flight five or so on came down east of Roswell,
mm-hmm.
The aircraft spotted it on the ground for us and told us where to go to look for it.
It was about 17 miles, I believe, east of Roswell.
East.
And then we had another one that, flight 11,
flight 11. That's the one that appears to have come down northwest of Roswell.
That's correct.
It appears to have almost come down exactly where they're talking
right.
about.
That's right. That was a very good flight.
That's the one where you provided a depiction to Colonel Weaver.
No, I don't think so.
That's yet another
that's
one.
That's a new.
That's a new. Okay, that's an early.
Where,
that's right.
Where's that old NYU report
under here?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, sir, I think I have that already taken out here.
Here is this is flight 5 east of Roswell.
Actually, right. in this
flight 11 is the one.
This one.
Yeah, that's the one
with this ground tank.
There's the ground tank right there, and here it is.
Right.
Here it is right here, and that's more or less just due west of Walker.
Walker Air Airfield.
And that was followed.
Okay. Well, that conflicts. Then this graphic conflicts with this graphic. It shows number 11 coming down north. I assume is that circle, is that the Roswell reporting station?
That's about right.
Would this circle, is that a weather reporting station, which would be Roswell?
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. Okay. Yes, you're right.
Because this has it coming down northwest. And that's
see.
A fiction.
What's the origin of this? Is that out of here?
I'm gonna say it's in the back of one of the reports.
See this?
It looks to me like it may be in this. It looks to me like it may have been out of this report.
So I don't think
this one right.
Yeah.
Right here.
It'd be in the back. Almost all the way in the back.
See, not every report had this graphic depiction like this, which was number 10.
That's correct.
Or number 8, rather.
You'll probably find it in there.
I think it was in one of the thicker ones. I thought it would be in here.
Okay. C-48-25. I can tell you this, Lieutenant, with those numbers, it wouldn't have been in that that first report, because these flights were much later, so that flight ended...
Technical report number 1.
Right, and flight 58 and 55 aren't going to be in that early report. They occurred after that report was written.
Yeah, it's in one of the later reports.
Well, I would say that what was in that first report is more accurate than this. This I think occurred after I left NYU, and I would.
It's kind of a general summary then.
It's a general summary.
Okay.
And flight 11 was a very important flight. It was they got very good data on it. They carrying people. And
the Spillhouse wrote his faces.
Oh, you already seen the
he based his article from Journal of Meteorology on it.
Right, and he wrote a paper in the bulletin. The fact that the balloon trajectory has this hook in it when it went over the mountain ridge.
That was the anticyclonic
exactly
winds aloft.
And so he and Bernard Harvitz were very excited about the fact that the balloon at nominal constant level had a change in direction when the air was forced over the mountain barrier. And they published a special paper on that. So everybody was happy with this flight. Well, as soon as that flight was made, the next day, that was on the 7th, and we went home on the 8th.
And that would be the reason why there'd be no one there in the area who could explain this debris that was brought in. There were no experts there who dealt with this particular type of material or radar reflectors.
Well, but there was really no contact between, at that time, as far as I know, between Peoples and Roswell. And there's no way Roswell, other than my getting turned away by the, my memory being turned away by the MPs at the gate, there's no way that the people at Roswell would have known what was going on over at Alamogordo. We operated, when we sent people to Roswell, Hackman worked out of a motel to receive. And so, The more puzzling thing in line of what you say comes from Curry's diary. Because here's what Curry's diary says. Let's see, Alamogordo, balloon flight 11A off at 507. Big plastic balloon with small auxiliary plastics, etc. Watson Lab and gear. Followed a theodolite receiver to about 11. Picked up on radio sound receiver at Roswell and then followed. Then came down at 11 at 10,000 feet. Cap should have punctured plastic, and then it came down at near Highway 70 between Roswell and Tularosa. Second balloon met balloons with radio sound up about 6:30. Third balloon with 2.5 pound stick of TNT and cap set by pressure element, set to fire at 35,000 feet up at 6:20.
And what day is that again?
July 7th. Service bombing at Site 4 from 5:45 to 8:45 at 15-minute intervals. Ireland followed main receiver only 3/4 hour, but followed radio sound about 3 hours. 35,000-foot implosion, off about 6:55. Vivian got instructions for completing work on flights 1 to 30 and packed all records and photo. Sent off TWX regarding Bermuda flight and wrote up memo on it. Worked with Eileen on April 1st rocket plotting H Delta 5, HT, SST, whatever they is. Now July 8th, C-54 off about 10:30 with 23 people, all NYU, Watson Lab, including Vivian, Eileen, and somebody else, I can't go. Lieutenant Thompson, Edmondson, Reynolds, and myself left. Wrote a report on East Coast flights for Peoples. Now here's 9 July, the time this occurred at Alamogordo. Worked today on balloon flights, studied Watson Lab records of them briefly, and wrote memorandum to people about results. Left in car this PM later. Flat tire between Roswell and Tularosa and stayed there. July 10th, changed tire and went into Roswell, bought new tire, off to El Reno, Oklahoma today. Stopped in cafe in Hereford, Texas, and met Danny Harns from UGC. Went up to office and saw Bob Cowden, somebody in charge and supervisor. And that's the end of it. So there's no hint that Crary was involved in any cover-up such as this clearly is. This is a cover-up right here, because they talk about our operations, they talk about our balloon that we thought went to Colorado, and they all claim it to be part of Pritchard's radar operation.
But he wasn't launching one.
He wasn't launching one.
So where did they get the equipment to take this picture? Did you leave equipment behind?
Or are these historical photos?
This is right outside our hangar.
Those are your people.
It's our equipment and my stepladder.
Did you leave equipment there?
Yes, everything.
Because you were expecting to return.
We were just going back.
How did they know how? It looked pretty tricky. How did they know how to do that?
Lieutenant, I just don't know. I don't know anything about the hierarchy above us. I do know that I worked carefully with a guy named Larry Dyved, a pilot, who later became a private pilot running a fixed base operation in Alamogordo and got killed 20 years ago. But I know I worked with Larry Dyved, whose name you'll see here. I don't remember Pritchard at all, but Dyved was my contact with the radar. And I know that they didn't have balloons or anything else, yet they talk about boiling balloons there.
So when you returned on your next field trip
September,
did you see that someone had tampered with your equipment and used up some of your balloons?
If it did, it didn't ring a bell.
And no one mentioned it to you. No one said, hey, look, we had to do something while you were gone.
Well, I think we were just some ignorant, little, innocent graduate student contractors on a military base, and things were going on that we didn't know anything about.
So no one approached you to say that they had used some of your equipment?
Not at all.
Well, the thing is, this photo that's depicted here in the July 10th Alamogordo News, this could have been taken during one of your actual launches versus because you...
I think not, Colonel, because they say that this the whole thing is that the whole
they,
article
they
here,
demonstrate
that this was a demonstration. And I would have thought, since we were, Cray was our, he was a senior person, and he and Peoples was our contact with the base. But we had, other than Dyved, we had no real contact with anyone I remember. I do remember being very disappointed with the radar.
Well, if this were a demonstration, sometime on the 9th or 10th of July prior to this being published, they talk in terms of here, these radar reflectors, these particular radar reflectors, as having labels on them. The radar reflectors that you were using, did they have any type of labels talking about being property of the U.S. Army or Watson Laboratories?
None that I know of. We were strongly encouraged not to mix in the Air Force with what we did. Everything we had an NYU label, and I may be able to dig back in my file somewhere.
So they may have had an NYU label on it.
If
even the service was.
We didn't on service, but on radar test flights, there's no way we would have put a label.
Those were just shakedown flights. You were just saying, hey, what's going to work best to get the data? So let's use some of these equipment that we have and let's see what
that's
works.
That's correct.
So you'd have someone on the radar and say, yeah, this configuration works. This one doesn't.
That's right.
Doom, doom, and that's what you were doing. And then later on, you refined your technique.
Well, what we would do is we would put up things, and they'd come back and say it didn't work, and so we'd scratch our head and do something else. But we were running that end of the balloon end of operation. Nobody else was flying balloons around us. There may have been a radio sound operation out over White Sands.
Okay.
But there was not one, as far as I know, at either Roswell or Alamogordo.
Okay.
If there had, I would have used them, because we were using standard AMQ-1 radar.
But you did coordinate with Big Spring, Texas. It's in the reports.
Well,
you guys, when you came back to New Jersey, you or wherever you were, yeah, New Jersey, New York, you were sending thank you letters to various organizations that helped you while you were in the field. And one was Big Springs, Texas, some other places that you had coordinated.
Well, thank you for.
I didn't.
Well, glad you have.
The New York University reports are very voluminous. They're in a bound, three big bound volumes. And,
you actually have them?
Oh yeah, they had them. I had the originals with your signature, and
there.
Still have the signature.
Well, you're making my point that there was not, there probably wasn't any other nearby radio sound station for us to receive things. I'd forgotten all about Big Springs, but. I'm sure we made every effort we could to get radios on reception.
Okay.
Sir, can you think of, just in general, any other explanation for what became the so-called Roswell incident than what we've discussed here as far as potentially your balloon project, which at that time was a very secretive project? Is there any other explanation you can think of?
No, and the particulars of this case are sufficiently nearly unique that I think no one else had anything that could have fit into providing these results. No, we were doing something that was unorthodox, using targets that, as far as I know, had not been flown before in New Mexico. There's no way that the rancher could have ever seen one, and there's no way that either Major Marcel nor General Ramey or General Ramey's people could have come up with providing a radar to substitute for the real debris. The answer is, I think there's a very high likelihood that the unusual things we were doing provided this debris. However, whatever all the other stuff that's in, and a lot of the material, I can't explain bodies or material that can't be folded by sledgehammer.
Now, let's dwell on the bodies just for a second here. It turns out that during this time frame, 1947, 1948, 1949, there were numerous aircraft accidents, a lot of fatal aircraft accidents in this general vicinity. Did you all ever come across any of those?
No, sir.